morning, everyone. Another one member of our guest. I'll continue with the second day of the public hearing, whereby the stakeholders that are indicated in our program will be able to make their presentation, and members will engage in the presentation of the stakeholders. As I indicated yesterday, that it is our responsibility as this committee to involve the public in the legislative process. Public participation is vital. People have their voice in their own development. That is why we call these public hearings, to hear the views of the people about the implementation of the revitalization and development program, its effectiveness, its shortcomings, because we have to work together to ensure that the farms that have been restituted, the farms that have been redistributed, are productive. We have to make sure that the sufficient support that has been given to small and medium farmers to improve production in their farm, and also to catch up, to be part of the commission stream and to contribute to the economy of this country. Without a waste of time, when looking at our program, we have the first presentation from Bosnia Castle, from Nama Livestock Farmers Association. Yes, over to you. Maybe before that, sorry, Mr. Castle, I'll allow members to introduce themselves, because you said you're not part of the discussion. From Yulengwenya, Mabila, the chairman of Rural Development, of the Solar Community on Rural Development and Land Reform.
Thank you, gentlemen. Thank you, Justice Yulengwenya.
My name is Alex Chevalier. I belong to this family.
Good morning. My name is Andrew Mudela. I'm a member of the committee representing the African National Congress.
Nasili Verenye Fred Makash, a member of the committee.
Thank you very much, honorable members. We've got the support staff who coordinated, who support us on our activities as a committee. Can they also introduce themselves?
Good morning, Madam Chair. Honorable members, my name is Bomi Nkosi Izu, in the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Madam Chair, my name is Musabe Edwin. I'm responsible for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
Madam Chair, honorable members, my name is Mani Bongo Tuan from Rural Development and Land Reform.
Let me say, honorable members and colleagues, my name is Rashid Fellow, Parliamentary Liaison Officer for the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform.
The Rural Livestock Farmers Association would like to take this opportunity to thank the government for making this time available so that we'll be able to engage and be able to express
shortcomings, the successes, the emphasis on the policy that has distributed the masters. We thank you very much for that. Grammar has got a position, started applying for the land in 2002. It was a long and tedious process. We only managed to be given the land in 2009. Feel that as it may, for us the 7 years was part of being an informal classroom, learning from other projects of their successes and their failures. For us the 7 years period, we were in a kind of an informal classroom, while the goals and the stones of the program, we think that is all the failing. We looked at the strengths and weaknesses of other funding entities, and we said to ourselves, as soon as we acquire land, we'll try to be as less disruptive as possible in terms of making sure that when the land is provided to us, we make it as productive as possible. Initially, the then Department of Land Affairs wanted us to be a group of more than 120 people, and we protested. They reduced the number to 200, we protested, and they reduced the number to 70 people. Now, there are 70 people who most of them have no farming background, but they've got the history of maybe being a headman somewhere in the country. Yet the opportunity presented itself, we said to ourselves, we take the bull by its horns. As you might have seen in our written submission, one of the frustrations in particular I have to the buyers, let's say, in this front, is the procrastination of the directorate and some senior officials in the rural development plan who procrastinate when you make submissions on whatever assistance you want. Particularly the extension or extension officers whom we rely on in terms of being mentored to go through to the process. The practical example was when we were given tractors 2 years ago. The tractors were supposed to be delivered in February because it was planting season for the pyramid in the next month. The tractors came in April, and that's the time lost. That has been one of our greatest frustrations when it comes to being able to make the land as productive as possible. But as I said earlier on, that we survived because on the fifth year after applying, we came together and started working on a fund whereby I can say we raised 140,000 as these individuals. We were 70 people, but out of 70 people, 21 people came together and said we want to make this success. 50% of that was livestock, 50% was in cash. So that when we've learned the fact that there is delays, we can be able to sustain ourselves in a short space of time. A practical example of the procrastination of these officials and the hostility that you get from them sometimes, this must be decided as to do they want the program to succeed or not. Remember, this is a group of people who have never been exposed to this. I mean, in the early days, we were anti-Africans and anti-Africans. Now, here we come. We have to be able to be the mainstream of the same entities we are not. Situated in the land of the Swartland, right in the midst of those who are very much against what our government is doing, you can imagine our neighbors are all Africans speaking. In terms of our operational business name, we have to retain the name Hans-Sekran Farm in order to be able to be respected in the area, to be able to be accepted in the area. We are Lama Livestock Farming Association, but trade as Hans-Sekran Farming, just to make our neighbors happy so that we can be able to interact with them. And we try by all means to speak as much Afrikaans as possible, as much as we are exposed to Afrikaans. We looked at the policy and we could see that status 23rd of July 2013, we are like that. And we looked at some recommendations from the business enterprises which dated from June 2010 to 2012. And you can see that some recommendations are made there. We would like the policy to revisit the question of forcing the community to have a larger contract. Because this on its own is a hindrance. Because
was having 70 people coming from all different sorts of the crowd with different outputs that they want to see on the program is a challenge on its own. We would like the policy to look into the splitting of the current groups. For instance, if we are now, if that can be split within that so that we know that the 15 or 20 members are maybe assigned another farm somewhere. We also would like the policy to look into the question of allowing those, for example, 70 members, among the 70, there's only 30 practical active members. We would like to give it the right to say, talking about what the account is called the buyout, we would like that to be taken into account. Because as it says, in fact, in our group, there are 70 members, but only about 31 people who are practically active. And yet, when there is platforms of this nature, it is those members who are not active who would remind us that don't forget to go to Parliament, there's some presentations to be made, or and stand for us there, and yet they are practically active. We've got to extend our request to the policy makers that as much as the policy puts two key elements in the document, the do's and don'ts of the policy. On the question of the don'ts, there's a notion that says this is not to enrich people, this is not to help proxy farming or farmers. We would like the oversight, to have an oversight on the officers who are assigned to be able to assist us, because as far as we have had our experience in the last 5 years, the officers in Tuscany don't give us as much information as we would like to in terms of making sure. As a result, we have been vulnerable to people who claim to be mentors, co-managing, because our officers are not giving us the right information as to what quality of people should be able to assist us in terms of making sure that we succeed. We also would like to have a situation whereby these officers are being called into this committee and give their account in terms of what have they done in assisting the emerging platforms like ourselves. The availability of the directorate, particularly in this province, also is a challenge. For example, we had two extension officers in the last 4 years. But within the last 4 years, we can only say we've been operational for 2 years. Because the first 2.5 years, the land was unarable. We had to make the land arable, bullmark, so that we can be able to produce. So for 2 years, people would say we had the farm for 5 years, but in the process of the way, it's only 2 years. And the only reason the benefits only in the last financial year, where we made a net profit of only 500,000 for the first time in all the years that we've been in the farming. Madam Chair, those are some of the frustrations that we are faced with as this entity. The members that currently now, where are we in terms of making sure that whilst there are these delays in terms of funding, for us we believe funding is good, but us funding is not everything. We don't only depend on saying it's not funding, but more important to us is the commitment from the members. So what we've done, we engaged some university students from the University of Cape Town to make a research on our land, to find out what other crops can be grown in the land, because our mainstream business was going to be the livestock cattle, but the land is so hot and it's very salty. So we looked at things like the wheat, the canola of late, we actually produced canola in the last tradition, which made much of land for us. And the sweet sugar are working for us very well. We're now exploring the oil land, the old land, whereby we're going to look for it in terms of grazing. When we arrived at the farm, there were only 7 large tents. We split those tents into 17 tents with 100 hectare pear camp, because the land is 2,228 hectares. We split it that so that we can be able to change to a land. We don't exhaust the land by planting on it every time. So the plans for let me just give you the figures for 2014 and the plan for 2015. The wheat, we planted 500 hectares in 2013, and 2014 we planted 443. 3,500 as of next month. We've already in the process of transferring the grant next month. The canola, we plant 150 hectares in 2030, 2014 we plant 300, 2015 because of the weather, but we experienced last year because of the right area. We're looking at 29 hectares of that. And the pitarogin, we planted 260 in 2013, 229 in 2014, and we're looking only at 23 hectares this financial year. That's all related to the weather conditions in the area that we're in and the type of water that we're having, which has become a problem as well with our officers. We've been banging and knocking on their doors for the purification of the water, for the grazing land, and for the livestock that we have, to no avail. And you see in our returns of this environment, they just walked in last time, last year, just put in the bowl without even contracting us this cost of 150, and it's not operational as we speak. The grazing land, we only will be looking at 129 hectares in 2015, as it stands. Madam Chair, that is the state of our farm. How have we survived also in the last 4 years? Like mentioned, there's a personal of equity. We go from time to time to the farm. We did not abandon the farm. And what we did, there were some people employed in the farm and we did not make much changes because we knew of the experience that they had in the farming industry. So we brought them up with the feathers by coming in and disclosing everybody. But our emphasis is on people like mentors and those who are saying are being provided to us by the officials to say you are going to co-manage. The risk factor is not balanced, especially when it comes to the production. A practical example, when we spoke of a JV with our neighbor, who is very much is mentoring us, having been provided to us by the officials, when it comes to profit sharing or to the risk, he doesn't want to take a risk, but he wants to have a profit share by him. This becomes a problem for us. In our PMT, we heard last month on the 27th of January, because we hold our PMTs every month, every last Wednesday of the month on the farm. We express our disrespectful team in terms of not wanting to take risk, because we always do that. If you're on JD, you have a special separate account by putting on the money so that the risk can be equal. But in this instance, because of the decision that we have on the farm, which are very much dilapidated and is very old, we rely on hiring some machinery from other farms, which we have to pay for that. As a result, the gross that we made on the canola last year was 1.2 million, but we could only have a net of 500,000. Now, if you look at 70 people on that question, we will put something like 2,000 on the dividends. Now, that's not what we want. But why have we not had any process from our members is that when we did our inside business plan, we explained very well that this is a long-term process because the land, by our predecessor, was just used as a kind of a holiday resort. It was only there since 1936, I think, 1962. It was in the land, and it was there with the family, and only having sheep, whereby on Christmas Day, he would slaughter a sheep by feather, talking about the land, he was not interested in the land. So our people do understand that it's a long-term process, but I think now that we've turned the tide since our last financial year, we are looking forward to making sure that the officers that are given to us to assist are really doing their job and attend to our needs, as I indicated earlier on, not just about money and funding, but more about commitment and how it is forward. Further investment we made. We realized, as we have looked in the past in the 7 years before 2009, that one of the handicaps of those that have not succeeded in the industry was education. As a result, in 2007, we sent two of our guys to Ersenberg College for farm management. And currently, we have a guy who's supposed to be a college. He is now on the kind of training process because he took 2 years to enter in the college thanks to the Department of Agriculture who managed to pay for his fees. He's currently now running the show at the farm. He's not a proxy because he is a best.
sponsorship by you, therefore, next meeting, we are working very hard making sure that everything is of success with our support as well. In the process, we have made some unpopular decisions, because sometimes our inner business leads to unpopular decisions. The process of Mr. Nwene Gandhi and the next on my left hand side was not of our beneficiaries. But at some stage, we had to let him go because of the unfairness that he was doing to our labor staff. And he was engaged in some activities that he never endorsed him to work on. December, we had to say, unfortunately, we have to publish. I don't want to get into detail. But the land is very fertile in terms of like Roy Grant. Just to make a tip of what we need outside of that. When about 30 hectares of the Roy Grant seat, once he was managing the farm, had been one of our own. It showed me that for the past 12 months he's been making sales on the Roy Grant. And when we made our estimated calculations, we calculated that he must have netted something between 110,000 rand over a period of 9 months. For that reason, we had to let him go. We're waiting for him. We've given him all his rights that he will go under the CCMA to complain he has to come for 30 days in advance from last. Before him, there was also a farmer by the name of Pierre Panagata, who was also given to us as E mentor. That's why I like the committee was really looking at this question of mentoring and management as to who are these people that are given to us, including the company that manages the land. Because when we looked at the land for the price that it had been paid, it was way above what it was about. Because the evaluator and the one who approves happens to be either the uncle or the son-in-law or whoever in that particular company that evaluates. So we do not even know the PE status of these people that use the evaluation. The prices in terms of hiring the machinery from the other neighboring farms. When we ask our officer, how do we make sure that these prices are being charged on us for doing what these guys are doing? Are they in line in terms of farming practices? He gets the prices from the same vendor. This is now the official from the department, but it gets through from our group mentor as to these are the prices which he works on when he works his buses. For us, that became very, very odd. Therefore, it's like reporting a policeman to another policeman. So we would be able to succeed. But be that as it may, we are forcing on, and the main issue is the professionalism and the delays into assisting us to making sure that we succeed. But our emphasis is on the fact that we can only train one members who are effectively working, and we'd like the policy to look into that. The question of the mentors, or the managers, the JVs, the core management, but we would like the policy to look into what measures can be taken to those who are assigned to that kind of duty when they fall short of those duties which they are assigned to. Our point of premise was we dare fail our government. That was our point of departure. We dare fail our government in terms of making the success of the farm. Hence, we could manage the ratio. 140,000 rand, which kept us going for the first 2 years to make the land efforts. Then we got grants, home grants, and other grants. But prior to that, we did things on our own. As I said before my colleagues, there's anything that they might like to add if you allow them. I'd like to say thank you for giving us this opportunity.
Thank you very much for
Your
presentation. Any additions? Just for a minute. Thank you very much. Can I get the second presenter from Trust that May Newman? Over to you.
Thank you, Chairperson. From Kwasatu, so Zaman to pick up, so Brother Abrahami. Okay, Matthew was supposed to do the presentation, but he's been out of Cape Town, so he's asking to do the presentation. And the presentation from Kosatu and Nehao and what's on Nehao. And one of the key things is that we look at the issue in a very general sense. Firstly, in terms of dealing with the fact that we're dealing with the historical legacy of our past, we're dealing with the legacy of the fact that there's poverty and inequalities, and so we're looking at the land and rural development issues in general, but we also look at it in terms of employees on farms. And the issue is a very sensitive and important matter to deal with, the issue of land reform, the issue of rural development. And we have been part of processes in discussions around the extension of Kenya, the security of Kenya, in the sector. And there are many issues that were raised. One of the key things is that in the development of recapitalization and development of rural development issues, the land reform issues, is the fact that in our sense we feel that it's a market-based principle. It's not about helping people, it's about money-making issue, and that's why there was this issue of willing buyer, willing seller, where the owner, even though the owner got the land from theft initially, they could choose how much they want to sell it for, they could also choose whether they want to sell it or not, and it was a willing buyer, willing seller, which of course, we didn't agree with that one, and we felt that what we needed to do is that even initiating the discussions, one of the key things we were raising is that can't we have a situation where there's a law which says that land is going to be divided between the workers and the owner, and then the workers get a piece of land and they become owners of that piece of land, and they don't have to raise millions of rents to get there. So basically, In 2012, with the ANC Congress, there was a resolution that says that we should deal with replacing willing buyer, willing seller with a just and equitable principle in the Constitution. Immediately, the state is acquiring land for land reform. And not that the owners of land that got it from theft can decide how much they want to sell it. So it's something that we're still dealing with in terms of how to overcome the difficulties that we face in that sector. Then there's the issue also that even in a sense that in the land reform process and then the beneficiary, then the difficulty is that is there support for those people. And in the Kosatu research, they found that at least 70% of the land that was redistributed became unproductive, and it was a problem because often people that got the land are poor and they don't know how to, they can't buy the tractor and the everything to deal with the land. So the proposal of Kosatu is that even if there's a situation where land is redistributed, then there must also be a process of helping the people that get the land that need support. The other thing that Kosatu and in general,
we feel that there's super exploitation of farm workers in many ways. The issue of accommodation, which is a problem, where in many cases farm workers are sometimes just kicked off the land, kicked off out of the houses and don't have a place where to go. There's in a sense a retrenchment. I mean, there was a case once in the portfolio committee on labor where they were dealing with the issue of labor brokers, and farm worker organizations were there, and then there was one organization which said that they were working on a farm in the Eastern Cape, and they came to work one day, and then they were told, you have to get on the truck, the truck's going to Cape Town. If you don't get on the truck, you don't come back here ever again. And they came, the truck brought them, the labor broker, to Cape Town, and someone died in the truck, and the family didn't even know. They couldn't even go home and tell the family they had to go to Cape Town. And so a key thing that we're also dealing with is that in the farm sector, the super exploitation of workers, farm workers, there's the issue of, I don't know, I mean, there used to be the issue of salaries being paid in a glass of wine. And sometimes we hear now from the unions in the farm sector that in some instances they're still doing that. And we need to deal with the issue of how do we deal with the issue of the province in terms of employment, conditions of employment. Now there's the issue of, in terms of dealing with that, we were saying that in terms of legislation, that there should be legislation that deals with protection, deals with safeguards, deals with protecting people, and so on and so on. Now, what we said at the start is that amending legislation and improving implementation capacity to ensure Kenya security, with a view to enhancing the security of Kenya farm dwellers and other vulnerable groups, and complementing this with medium to long-term strategies that give farm dwellers homes and production land of their own. And that's linked to the point which I was raising earlier on about the fact that we need a legislation that will allow government to take that part of the land without them being paid, and then dividing it amongst historically people that were in terms of apartheid, and then helping them to get the land and help them to deal with, not just get the land, but also deal with using the land in terms of, for example, what was raised by a previous speaker. Then there's the issue of the traditional leaders in terms of land. And there's also something that was dealing with, and in the submission to the, there was a green paper for communal tenure to be printed separately from leasehold, freehold, and precarious tenure and outside of the land before building. So COSATU made a resolution to say that we didn't support the proposal in the current paper. And the issue was that there's the issue of communal tenure, but there's also what about the issue of individual people tenure, and should not be treated separately and should be worked together. Also proposed that in terms of access to land and support for agricultural activity. We also propose in the government that look at how to help women, females in this context, in the elections. We're also saying that in the areas, in communal areas that have been established, that residents must be able to be involved in all decisions on dealing on the issue of lands and land use and activities. Finally, we saying that COSADU, including now, we remain firm supporters of the need for adequate land reform. It's a matter of urgency. And the government is pardoning efforts to achieve this fundamental objective. However, there's all concerns that we have, despite the fact that we support the process. The first thing we're saying is that the RCP is cost inefficient. It doesn't deal with the fact of how it's going to help people in terms of it's going to use X amount of money to say, let's deal with land issues, let's deal with the housing issues, let's deal with the fact that people might need equipment and things. There's the issue of the extent of the resource captured by a relatively small group of strategic partners who are essentially funding state subsidies. But a key thing that COSAT we're raising is that we need to find a way that is going to be support financially and not only but even equipmentally, you know, giving farm workers equipment to actually do the farming, which they don't do. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, the name, each and every institution for so much of communicating. So that is why I'm calling you Mr. Newman. Thank you very much for the presentation. The next presentation of all the slight changes in the program will be by the Legal Resource Council.
Okay, so I'll start here and then I can show with the slides. Good morning to the committee and everyone else present, also from the department and from the community. And thank you very much for the opportunity to make these submissions. Nancy and I are both from the Legal Resources Center, the public interest law firm, with offices across South Africa. And LRC has been doing this platform for about 25 years and represent communities all over in all provinces of South Africa. And in terms of challenges, also in the execution and redistribution and also in security. And so that's really where we draw from that experience, which are the comments that we'll share with you today. Now, I'm not going to go through the entire presentation. I want to focus on a couple of key issues. And I'm going to deal with the redistribution side and, of course, deal with the execution side. Because many of the issues that we were going to raise over the last two days and also in particular in the evaluation report that the department presented yesterday. So we want to hone in on perhaps a couple of issues that have not been raised and we think are really key. And so starting with redistribution, which I will deal with. An absolute key issue that has not really been raised much as should be is that despite the fact that the RICA policy have objectives of both improved food security and smallholder development and support for agrarian transformation. Funding is currently going almost exclusively to large-scale commercial farm projects, and small-scale farmers are losing out completely. And this might be for a number of reasons. The first reason is perhaps quite obvious, but the recap is really, the language of the recap is kind of geared towards large-scale commercial farming. I mean, talking about business plans and requiring quite detailed business plans, which often are quite inappropriate for small-scale farmers or farms or farm holdings. And, you know, envisioning this idea of strategic partners and more, as we heard yesterday, investments coming from strategic partners. These are practices that actually, in practice, exclude small-scale farmers because they simply can't speak that language. And this is, we think, being reflected in the allocations. It's not entirely clear from the report that was presented yesterday how much of the money is going to small projects and how much is going to large projects. It's more delineated according to the previous funding arrangements like LRAD and plants and so on. But it is probably the case that LRAD and past projects are already supported, and that's 80% of the gap at the moment, and that they're going to large-scale commercial farming projects. And the problem is that small farmers have nowhere else to go, because RECAP has replaced all the other funding sources that were available before. By replacing those funding resources, RECAP now has a very particular focus that in practice is including small farmers, and this is really a key issue. And I want to sort of focus on one area of small-scale holding or small-scale farming that's a good example to show how these farmers are falling into the cracks, and that is the case of commonage. And it may be that many people today don't know what commonage is anymore because it's kind of become a forgotten aspect of land reform in Africa, even though at the beginning it's really key, really crucial. And commonage is mutual owned land that is exclusively held for the socio-economic development of communities. And this commonage has been around for 150, 200 years. It used to be crown land. The municipalities used to hold it also for the socio-economic needs of communities, but of course before that was white communities. But after 1994 there was a realization all this land is available, it belongs to municipalities, we can use it for land reform. And then as early as 1997, a commonage policy was developed in order to use this commonage land that is available to municipalities and leased out to small-scale farmers in communities. And it turned out to be key. In 2002, the department said that commonage accounted for most redistributed land in South Africa. And it's a no-brainer. You don't have to buy the land. It's already there. It's already belongs to the municipality. And what is important is it's being leased out to farmers, but it remains in the ownership of the municipality. So it's really an ideal situation where farmers can use it for self-farming. It's sort of a stepping stone, or if not, for real food security. And generations of small-scale farmers can be helped through combination. So all these things made it a really key element of land reform. And by 2008, there's a million hectares of common land available all over South Africa. So the land is there. But today it's hard to find officials within the Department of Rural Development who don't or understand what commonage is and how this can be used, because it's just gone out of fashion, I should say. Now, that problem in itself, because commonage is very useful and it's not being used, but it's a particular problem for farmers on commonage land who are trying to explain their very particular situation to the recap process and to talk about that. Because now, before, there was the commonage infrastructure grant, because the obvious problem on commonage land is this municipal owned land, but it has to be used by small farmers. It needs infrastructure. It needs water pipes, for example, for farmers to access water on the land. And so infrastructure is really what is required. And so to address that need, there was commonage infrastructure grant, and municipalities could apply for that money, and municipalities put in infrastructure in the land. And remains municipal land with their infrastructure, but generations of farmers can use it. Now that has been replaced by RECAP, but now it's become very difficult for a municipality as an applicant to RECAP to explain the peculiar situation and explain that this is on behalf of a particular group of beneficiaries now, but will also serve beneficiaries into the future. And so this has become a difficult situation. You'll see on, there's only one place where commerce is mentioned in the evaluation report, and that is on page 11, where it is set out the percentage of money from RECAP going to the different programs, and it's less than 1% going to commerce. Which is really a shame, and it's something that, that should be addressed. Now, there was the idea yesterday mentioned that for small farmers, perhaps loans, cheap loans, should be used, which you know could be an idea for some small farmers. But clearly, small farmers would not be able to get loans to put infrastructure on municipal land, so it won't be a good fit for this particular need, and so it remains a serious issue. And I want to, just the last slide I'll talk to, give you one very concrete example of one group of farmers on a piece of common land that's really been struggling to get funding. And the issue that one identifies in this case, really, is the problem of the lack of institutional memory in the department very often, which means that applicants or people wanting to access the funding is often start over again every time there's a new official leaving the decade, and the turnover is really high, and so that is a real problem. So this is a story of the Stellenbosch Small Farmholder Trust. You can imagine Stellenbosch is not the easiest place to do land reform. So this group of previously disadvantaged farmers have retired and have kept on trying to make land reform work there. In a group of farmers of the 13 is now fewer because of the struggle. But it's on 55 hectares of land divided into 5 hectares of small holdings, small plots. And the farmers very successfully farm there with vegetables and chilies, strawberries, etc. And this project is quite remarkable. Former Minister of Land Reform, Derek Hanekom, visited the farm. He's visited the farm twice. The DG, former DG, has been there. And in the words of Mr. Derek Hanekom, this project is really a no-brainer. It was such an obvious project to support because the farmers are high-skilled, the land is available, they just need water infrastructure. And so he called it a no-brainer. And yet, the sale of the farm was 2002. There, in 2006, the department for the first time told them, yes, the municipality will apply for money from us, we will put infrastructure in the ground so that you can have access to water. That application the municipality did in the fund finalized in 2009, they got support from the University of Stellenbosch, and it cost them 200,000 rand, which becomes important. So the first application submitted in 2009. In 2011, they finally a reply from the national department saying, sorry, our policies have changed. This is when we get kind of started to come in. Our policies have changed. You now need a very detailed business plan to be submitted. We can't accept this application. So the department itself then got paid a group of consultants to come up with a second business plan. They paid 500,000 rand for that. The second business plan was finalized in 2013. It was submitted, and this time the department said, well, sorry, now the policy has changed again. Now we need a strategic partner to help the farmers develop a business plan. If you can imagine, that means going back for the third time, and almost a million have already been spent on just getting the application in. And that problem has been exacerbated by the fact that, you know, we keep dealing with your officials who don't know that this long issue with this project, and that really this project should not be forced to fit with Kenton, but it doesn't quite fit. And of course, we're not given up hope, and we're trying to get the application in for the third time. And I must say, when a strategic partner was kind of forced upon this group of farmers, who are highly skilled, who don't need anyone to teach them, you know, how to farm, the strategic partner also turned out to be really a bunch of, let's say, failed professional farmers who wanted to make a quick buck. And so, you know, this, I wanted to share that example just to show that, you know, there are very, very particular situations that are falling into the cracks with RECAP. And there are a number of ways to deal with that, and particularly institutional memory would be an important one. Also, you know, I'll talk about one size fits all and that's not the right way, but, you know, I don't think we realize to what extent we need to have people in the department that understand and have passion to understand the differences between these various projects. And I'm going to ask Henk to speak about restitution. You must tell me which slide.
Next slide number 8 shows the area that we want to cover. The first settlement support is now required with a first institution under the exception after the operating judgment in the Supreme Court of the Constitution. And we'd like to get to a case study of the next slide summarizes your ad hoc committee's evaluation of land reform and addressing the 1970 land. So 1.5 years ago, your ad hoc committee concluded that post-settlement support is more than what is about more than what ECAP offers. It also said that the problem of ECAP not addressing the delays in acquisition and settlement and engaging in production is noted. On the distribution, it said that the smaller the production quality and relevant development model is needed. It is not pro-commercial, as is the case with the ECAP policy. Category 1, small-scale farmers, subsistence producers, are largely excluded by the ECAP policy. And then I get to the final slide, slide number 12, where your ad hoc committee evaluates the restitution as against the distribution. And it says that many of the beneficiaries of land restitution are from lower income communities, and as far as the redistribution goes, large sums of money are increasingly benefiting the few. And this leads to the conclusion that the burden of addressing the legacy of the 1913 Land Act is increasingly being pushed to the restitution program. So we refer to your ad hoc committee's evaluation because we're asking this question as 1.5 years later, has the ECAP policy been shifted to address the real issues which your ad hoc committee recognized as problematic in our land reform program? The next slide shows what the ECAP policy says, also dated June 2013. It says that the ECAP budget, the budget for the projects that we're talking about, is coming from two places, the restitution budget and the land reform restitution budget. 25% of that budget goes over to ECAP. And the ECAP policy in paragraph I says that the existing restitution grant, the existing restitution grant system is done away with, is repealed. As for the common infrastructure grant, the restitution development grant, and the restitution grant. So, the system, the change involved that instead of restitution budget being used for post-settlement support, that's now what it comes out of ECAP. Now, does it reach restitution once it is in the ECAP budget? Does post-settlement support reach restitution once it's gone into the ECAP budget? And that is the question we're also asking today, because we're saying this on the next slide, that we haven't got the evidence on the paper, on the reports reduced to us, that restitution budget comes back to restitution beneficiaries. In the glossy report, the synoptic project profiles that we got yesterday, only 3 of the 36 showcase projects has got anything to do with restitution. The others are ORAD and PLUS projects. Now the Pretoria report, which is the subject matter of today's concludes this on table 5 on page 11. It says that ORAD project amounted to 39% of the ECAP budget, plus 39%. Restitution only got 6.5% out of ECAP. Communities got 2% and irrigation 3%. Now that is what Pretoria said. In the briefing that your committee got on in November last year from the department, we have this table. which helps us to look at what's happened beyond Prince's Stop, beyond the port of Pretoria. And what we get from that is that in the last few columns, it shows that the 3.2 billion of the recap fund, 444 million went to bus, 400 million went to the House of Thrones, and 250 million went to animal and stock management policy. So we don't see from this table, this report, how much has come back to the institution after the institution budget has contributed up to 50% of the recap fund. The next slide leads us to the conclusions and our questions, which we deem appropriate for your committee to address to the land reform and the party. And we've listed, not nicely, uniquely well listed, but there are four questions. Before I get to the four questions, I want to ask you whether I can quickly talk about the story of Ebenezer and its restitution base and its relationship, its challenge posed by the recap policy to that community. It is a land that's 18 years old. In 2000, the Commission and the Department offered the community in full and final settlement 25 million rand for the 52 farms that they lost when a poor white irrigation scheme was put on their land and they were moved downstream out of reach of the irrigation channel. In 2005, the Department and the Commission offered 100 million. So finally last year, the valuations have been done and a community land and development acquisition plan has been prepared, concluding that it will cost 200 million to buy the land and about half that amount to keep going, to take over the main concerns of intensive irrigation systems of vineyards and vegetables. So there's a total budget that has now been agreed upon by all the parties that will be necessary to make this restitution case happen. The response initially is this. Recap budget for the Western Cape will allow you at most 20 and perhaps 30 million. So you will have to do it piecemeal over a period of 15, 20 years. Now that's not appropriate for a rice-based project and for a rice-based restitution at outcome. Other avenues have been followed, and now there is a formal settlement agreement between the department and the commission and the community, and that must be made in order of court next week. And as recently as Monday, the response of the commission is that in order to transfer the first tranche of a six-year handover project, the department and the commission have still not made its mind up about how it is going to actually do so before in April, by April this year. It may have to be done under recap. Now recap does not provide for, design for restitution of this kind and of any kind. And we see that in the outcomes. Because what you've been presented with in the Pretoria report and what you've been presented with in the briefing November last year gives no proof that the restitution gets its fair share out of the recap. That brings us back to my questions. Recap does not serve land reform. Firstly, in terms of recap's own policy objectives, paragraph 3.8 of the Pretoria University report that is before you says that the current recap objective of graduating small farmers into commercial farmers ignores the fact that nearly all the farms being assisted or intended to be assisted by recap are independent commercial farming units that used to be farmers' large family farms and that production system mode is being continued. It does not address the issues of the 1913 Land Act and its legacy and the need to support the graduation
of small farmers.
Number two, and it's not included in the recommendations and it's not addressed in the response of the department or in Barbara's turnaround strategy that was also given to you, the 2013 turnaround document together with the delegation's document that was given to you and Barbara's turnaround proposals of 2013. Does not address the issue of value for money. 70% of the recap projects, this is in paragraph 4.8 of the Pretoria report, 70% of the recap projects were generating income. The others not. The sustainability is in question. Even for these redistribution projects, where only a few will benefit. 450,000 rand is spent per beneficiary. 580,000 rand. Half a million rand is spent. That is in terms of the narrow objectives of recap. Just a two more points. In terms of land reform objectives, in terms of what the ad hoc committee has instructed us to do 1.5 years ago, category one farmers and restitution is communicated. Redistribution benefits a few, that's the conclusion of your ad hoc committee. Restitution is burdened by the expectations of land reform, because restitution serves the poor. Restitution and redistribution supports the recap budget, and then restitution is neglected. So this is the question. Is the restitution budget being used through the recap budget to benefit the few under redistribution? We not only see that restitution is being neglected, but restitution is now expected to subsidize the few beneficiaries under redistribution. Chair, we can do better if we want to make land reform work.
Thank you very much for the presentation. Can I get comments, questions from members on the presentation? Can you comment on the first presentation by Lana Network Farmer Association, the factor, and also the presentation that has been made by the legal consultant? Honorable Chairman.
I wasn't in when the two presentations were made, Chairperson. I'll comment about the presentation, the last one now. Issues, tangible issues that were raised by the presenter, particularly the issue relating to Stellenbosch. This is an old project that has been with us for very many years. Some of us are in this committee, and I'm worried that this committee made their presentation more than three times. And how many times shall a person make a presentation, get a hearing from this department? What kind of this could they use? And the impression it gives is that we are in the business of producing business plans. So those people who are benefiting from this process are also making business plans, not the people who are supposed to be. Who are those business plans are intended to help? And I think this is very wrong. So maybe we need to hear from the department. What has happened with this Stellenbosch case? Are there other issues like this one? Because if we are added to something that doesn't sound fair, we need to look around it and say, are there other people who went through what this Stellenbosch people went through, and what is it that we need to do to ensure that we don't, this is like throwing money into the latrine. 300,000 and 500,000 rand business plan that goes to no use at all. And I think before we even actually know what has happened with this case, who are the people who are dealing with this case? If there is negligence on the part of the officials who are doing this thing, TG, you need to tell us there, speak the PFMA language, because the oversight is only done by us. country, it was an oversight on the side of the ship. It is men's negligence or something else. I think that is what we want to hear. And if there are such cases, then some action needs to be taken. Because this is wasteful and fruitless expenditure. If we make a business plan, that cannot be used for anything. It's wasteful. And the other one would be the comrades. Assistance, for instance, of people in rural areas. Because what is said is that most of the rehab, you are revitalizing something that was there before. You're not starting something from scratch. But of course, maybe there will be other areas where the project will be, taken from scratch. But why call it recapitalization? Because if it's unless you call it a capitalization process, I don't know. I use English as my working language. I need to be corrected that there's some new grammar. But Chairperson, I think we need to look at this so that we don't, when we make our policies, we don't rob gain to pay poor. Because if we kept then takes money from restitution and everybody else fails, somehow then it's really not worth it. Unless if we are showing something different that those gaps will be closed. There's a process for this and so a plan to close the gaps that are left by our concentration on cricket. I need to be educated, Chairperson. I said yesterday that we are here to learn and as we implement the programs and we learn from those in government and those outside, from even institutions like universities. We are not difficult people. We listen and we understand, then we want justice done to those who suffered under apartheid, to those who had like rights for them and other social amenities, the niceties of life, thanks to
those.
Thank you, sir. I think it would be rather unfair or inappropriate to put questions to people who have come to tell us how or many problems that are around them. For my part, somebody else may have questions. More questions would be directed at the department, because the 20% of populations point to serious gaps, either in the policy formulation or in the policy implementation. Take the case of the Lala Farmers Association. Then we will take the last one, if you like. These are repeated matters where officials of the department are repeatedly failing to service the very people they've been employed to. Question raised in the last presentation, that of the high staff turnover. Experience also by the Lala Farmers Association, where the point of that time again was recently a businessman. One also appreciates the angle from which COSATU is approaching, the whole problem, the social services, that are being covered, by the care program. The question is, how soon, and that's my question to the department, how soon does the department plan to finally resolve all these matters? Because obviously, these are not issues that are way beyond the capacity of thinking of all the whole department, from the minister down to the director. These are matters, if given serious attention, they can be resolved inside one financial year. As a committee member, I want to say to the department, please apply your minds to these problems. They are undermining a very, very fundamental process of the very constitution of the state. Because state is citizens plus land. People have got no effective occupation and ownership of their land. They are not benefiting from it. 500,000 rands to spend on one job is too much to ask. I witness this way you can create jobs. You can create a permanent job for less than 60,000 rands, depending on how you apply your budget. I've done it. And those people are still in jobs. I did it over 4 years ago. And those people are still keeping their jobs. I know in some cases you need as much as 2 million rands, but farming in general, you wouldn't need that amount of money. What is happening to the budget? obviously, money being spent is like money just being put down the road. And this was just not on for our state. Definitely, the officials of the department, as well as the political heads of the department, need to apply their mind very seriously to this. We're getting people coming back again, complaining about lack of service. The prices are flowing, but the services are not coming. That is the only comment I can make. And my question once more is to the government, can you make a plan to resolve this matter in the next week, this coming financial year? I think honorable from emboldened me to even make this mark. We can't have a business plan being applied coming again over a period of something like 9 years. Surely consideration should be given to the fact that these people initially wanted this and even if the high staff came over, consideration should be made to say, let's finalize this one, even if it's on the old policy. It's not a crime to do so. It's a service that has to be done. Thank you.
Hello, but there are some things that we need clarity in the school. So I want to comment in the contract. I don't know whether this is very difficult. I don't know whether I said they don't support the tech program. I don't know whether they don't support it just because of the illnesses by farmers or what. So I want to be clear on that. Or they don't support because the program. Yesterday we received a very good presentation from people that are doing the program. So I'm not sure maybe she can be explain what is the problem. For I hear the program, but I don't know whether they don't support the program as I, or they don't support the treatment by the farmers or not. Because I want to be clear by that.
Thanks for the presentations that continue to be eye-opening since yesterday. I have thought that the contextual issues were dealt with somewhat towards the end of yesterday. But it seemed that was like we haven't found each other even in the preliminary conversations following Ms. Gasta and Ms. Mohamed's presentations yesterday. There was some anxiety. Clearly, certain issues have got deeper to some contextual basis. Perhaps there's a need to make submissions to try and connect to some kind of understanding or we continue to meet other through each other. Or another two or three. I will not go there to the context, perhaps later on if possible, but for now I will not. But studies, which concerns reference to the University of Pretoria study, they must also do that favor to demonstrate the passion context. Link to the historical background of the country to how our country are. If we can link, we then see if we're on the same page and then we're able to then move. Chair, perhaps the other issue is on recommendations based on all the analysis. Yesterday, one answer to criticism and self-criticism and constructive criticism. You said this thing shouldn't be here, it should be there. Because our criticism that's just hanging in space is tantamount to destructive engagement. It is no option. Yes, I see what you are saying, but then what must we do as an alternative? And to a great extent, submissions, respectfully, submissions is not really apply much mind to selling alternative views to the committee chair. And I invite participants and stakeholders to really bother to think and sell propositions so that committee can then take to the department their proposition. Chair, quickly, but the issue about the business plans and the manner in which it's discussed, it was one, but It's like we are wanting to be dismissive of Jesus and the gospel of the center and all that. Very, very critical to Jesus then. It's a situation here. I may have to speak on this. I'm not a guy hard on Jesus then, but a situation where all state organs operate on the basis of the Public Finance Management Act, and therefore where all expenditure has got to be linked to some basis. And therefore, without business plan, one wonders how would we roll out any program. Sure, but the issue about business plan, why wouldn't we have organs in society, the Public Benefit Organization and others, helping small-scale farmers to develop business plans, or even take the course of the teaching course. Some officials at a certain level, deputy directors and below, should be able to help small game farmers to form business plans. Because viability, how are we going to test viability? Certain ideological questions, a practical question, viability. So as the chair, I'm still listening, perhaps at the second bite, at some stage, stakeholders will talk to why we want to do our business plans and why business plans are inherently a constraint. I've not come to that realization. Chair, lastly, on the consultation, there was a proposal that I largely relate to the issues Constantine raised against labor brokers, the job of antenna, and the traditional leadership. There was an issue on legislation needed to protect farm workers. I think that even there, we can't rest it there, that submission future. That submission must then probably make concrete proposals so that when the community sees and thinks that, yes, you need to protect the farm workers, then the tool to go. Everyone in the stakeholder is free to make proposals on legislation, and I chair accordingly invite COSAT to initiate such a legislation or the parameters, the framework for such, and they can even work with the Legal Resources Center, because I know they should be expert in that, to make sure that such a legislation is proposed and the protection of the farm workers and the conditions, the social conditions of action.
I don't wish to repeat what I have been said. I think in particular, when we really have come to die and large, the only thing I wanted to say is that I think when we meet in future with the department, we must reflect quite extensively on this whole issue of capacitation as the DGF indicates that they are busy with the recruitment of officials. But to me, those issues that community have raised might be internal, you know. There's always huge utilization of a consultant duty at huge cost. It's not helping us. It's money going down the drain. We must build the capacity internally to provide recipients or benefits are necessary. So us, we require business plans. We must be guided. But we know that the need for business plan must not be used as a basis for delaying much needed resources to the entities, as it has been experienced and mobilized year today, but I think, just in terms of COSATU, my understanding in particular is that the criticisms of RECAP is Comrade Newman have indicated their criticism is not similarly or directly similarly to the recap policy, but it's towards agrarian reform in general and everything that goes with it. The exploitation of workers, I think COSAT must play a role there. They must be more vigorous and aggressive, organizing and mobilizing farmers, farm workers, and fight for that. Of the farm workers is their responsibility. Okay, I think there's enough existing legislation that in actual fact provide protection, but if those legislation needs to be further tightened, I think it's important that we start to table those recommendations so that we indeed can process. When I say we, I'm talking about Parliament, to tighten up laws, etc. But for me, I think it's important that the two entities, and I'm talking the DG in particular with regard to your department and DAF, we always have spoken in the past, about the fact that the two entities, two departments, must work much closer. We need to assess in the future whether that is happening, because issues of extension officers, that is a tough responsibility. So I think DG, otherwise we have to begin to review the existence of the two departments, whether we do not need one single department to deal all of these issues, instead of having two separate entities whose work are overlapping, and in many instances, the one is causing problems for the other. Because I think what the Lambert group was saying, what the Stellenbosch example, I may just say that it would have been very well, very nice to have had those people present here today to speak for themselves. Of course, with the backing of the legal resources center, so I think.
Yeah, I suppose so. The government has spoken, but what I said, I mean, we are an activist parliament. I saw that very well yesterday. It was so clear. I saw people who were in the EDA, other developmental NGOs, organizations that are involved in legal and whatever, you know, legal rights, human rights, and Transvaal rural class and others. And then we look at people on the other side. Some of us were in NGOs that were involved in land and rural development. So that's why I said in the beginning when I talked that we, as an activist parliament, we are a parliament of learners. And as we sit here with people from academia and from NGOs, we need to help each other. How can we make South Africa a better place to be? And we can only do that if we listen ourselves. But at the same time, there must be a willingness on the part of those who are holding the press, you know, to commit to resolutions that are taken in this activist parliament with, you know, the people who come to this, who come to attend meetings of this committee. Most of them are activists in the, you know, in the land movement and general, you know, quest for development in this country. There were issues raised yesterday, Chairperson, that I think we should not forget them. One of them was raised by Lamosa, that somebody approached one of their members or the presenter yesterday to say, if you make an application now, we will fund you. So, and that thing gives an impression that for you to get your project funded, you need to be in partnership with somebody who will give you something at the end. And as long as this perception is not cleared, or there's no, this, I mean, as soon as, I'll be happy when I hear what the department will say about what they're going to do about this person, you know, and reporting back to us, you know, and where it be, because I think that's the guy, that proposal is the thing for that one, to the near criminality. And I'd really like to see somebody opening up a case. I don't know what case will be, I don't know what that case will be called, but we've got lawyers here who will advise us. But I think we need to start taking action, particularly when people come into this public space, to say, I was recruited by somebody to defraud the government, and that person was in the department. So I'm interested in knowing what the answers are going to be, because then it will make sense, right? Because the impression it creates is that if you don't have somebody inside, you are not going to be funded. I think this perception is very wrong. And that we need to do something to ensure that you don't need to have a contact in the department to get your project funded. Thanks, Chairperson. But those with ideas, you know, like Mbuli said, let's not criticize only. But as we criticize, we need to say, this is where we need to go.
And in the presentation, there are suggestions on what needs to be done. And then maybe after feeding those the suggestions of what we need to do, maybe we need to again engage with those who are coming with those proposals to the, how do you feel as achieving this? What are the, you know, what would be the milestones? What are the things that we need to do? What are the tools we need? You know, let's work on, I don't know, let's collaborate rather than, you know, competing in this one space. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. I think on the issue that has been raised by Honorable Charlene, it's a consultant who recruited not an official from the department, if I remember well. But I agree with the issue that has been raised by Honorable Magela that we've got legislation that are protecting someone else. And if Kotat was identified some gaps, I think they have to advise us where they get the existing legislation so that the department is in the process of amending some of the legislation so that the proposals can be taken into consideration when those legislations are being amended. But there were issues that were raised by Ilan Lama last week. Maybe if we, while we'll be responding, you touch on the issue of that judicial grant, whether did you receive it in full or not. We have also touched the issue of the irrigation system that was installed but is not functional, which amounts to $750,000. I must also indicate to this committee who was responsible for that, the official was responsible. Was assisting you because you highlighted the issue of the lack of communication on the other side, that it didn't communicate with you. You requested funding, but only the service provider came to install this, whether it's a borehole or the irrigation system. You also touch on the issue of working in groups. That when working in groups, the people are active, there are people who are inactive. Don't you have a constitution that will assist you how to deal with those people who are inactive? Because if you are working as a collective or a co-op, you must make a commitment that we are all responsible, we are all committed, we are all going to work in this land. If someone is not committed, not doing anything, must not expect, you know, some dividends when they come to the community. But can you also highlight to us, because you just highlighted to us the revenue that you have made on which produce Anola, because you are doing many things there. Can you also highlight to us the profits that you have made and also indicate whether you're able, out of what you're doing in that farm, are you going to be able to sustain yourself from now on going forward? Then, can I get some comments from the legal, start with the legal resource center?
Thank you, Jen. Maybe the most direct invitation was sent from Honorable Nguni on the issue of two aspects. One was constructive engagement, and number two is the issue of business plans. And because we must be very clear on this. We discussed that repeating the observations of the AFOC committee is not regarded as unconstructive comment and criticism, but it is becoming a real problem that the recommendations of the AFOC committee has not been addressed and is not being addressed. And it is simply the same. You cannot scope the recap policy only for your prize redistribution projects. And we need to be shown otherwise. Chair, I think that Professor Hall may address the slide number 12 that you were shown yesterday. The heading is Institutional and Governance Arrangements. And then it has numbers of redistributed farms since 2009, number of restored farms, and numbers of recap farms.
So that's a total. And this doesn't correlate with the other reports on the annual, but this, to the extent that it's a helpful comparison. There's a total of 1,500 decay farms, 1,800 restoration farms, 1,400 redistribution farms. So the simple mathematics that we're asking and which underlies the evaluation of the ad hoc committee is this. What happened to the 1,500 farms redistributed or resort that did not get recapped? Because post-settlement support is a killer. It is necessary. You've got to provide for it. It may be little, it may be a lot, but what happens? Who falls? Who fell between the gaps? This table shows over 3,000 farms restored or redistributed. Only 1,500 costs. Now, what happened to farmers and what happened to others? That's what I'm going to talk about. Simply on the issue of
that
response
to the comments that have been made by members.
So we would like to participate in stopping RECAP, which is now their own support system, to include those who are excluded or feel excluded, which is small farmers, commonage, and restitution. On the issue of business plans. Now, we're lawyers that take cases to court, but we spend an enormous amount of time on assisting with preparation of business plans because it's a necessary precondition for PFMA, because it's a necessary precondition for sound planning, because the courts have now said that you need a plan before there can be there must be post-settlement plan before there can be restitution. And that now comes from the Buffering case 2013. So that's what we do. But in the Ebenezer case, the business plan was prepared for 3 years, supervised by the steering committee involving the department, Department of Agriculture and the community, and even the landowners that were going to use their land. So after the product of 3 years of preparation of the business plan is produced, the response of the department and the commission is, sorry, now we're back to the budget of the RECAP. And implementation of the business plan cannot happen because the RECAP constraints apply. So we cannot afford the situation of the Catch 22 of constraints, myopic RECAP, that undermines the hard work done on business plans elsewhere. Thank you, too.
Sorry, I was hurrying him up because I want to say something to Honorable Mandela before he walks up, which is, I really appreciate your comments about. Well, I really appreciate his comment about the farmers here today, and I would like to take that as an invitation for the farmers to come see the committee and to tell them how they're faring and with their third attempt. Then I just want to make one very short comment about the business plan comment, which I think is a fair one. I don't think the point is certainly not that we shouldn't have any wear testing viability. I think the problem is with a very, very strict sort of template that's there for business at the moment. And in common in particular, I mean, the point is that for commonage land, it's not meant for a particular farmer. It's meant to be land that's available for many farmers. So, to have a business plan for one particular farmer is really useful. And it may be worth noting that under the commonage infrastructure guard, we used to have, it used to be called development plans. And that's a word that makes a big difference. And there used to be grants for development of development plans. And so, would have been more relevant in that particular case, and I think that's something that I was trying to say. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. If you look at our notes, the capital grant and the planning grant, the household grant, we are still saying waiting to see the day when we receive those funds. We had to go because of our credit records in terms of what we were doing, and as you can see also in my report, we had at some point had to go to Asra to make a loan as an entity. And we managed to get that loan because they could see our financial practices were well. And we serviced that loan very well in terms of the bank. We serviced to Nero. But that does not mean, in your last question, that now we do not need any funding from you to continue with the farm. I think what we said initially as I was speaking was we cannot fail the government for whatever is trying to help us on, but we still would need. I'll leave that up to the question by Honorable Mui, when he said why do I want to deal with business plans? I don't think we really are saying we must deal with business plans, but it's a question of being requested time and again and time and again, resubmit, resubmit, resubmit. This is now it's another plan, they call it plan. You know, and it just gets all these acronyms. The type of business plan we must make. Of course, you are also saying, Honorable Member, we should dedicate that to some lower people, the teachers, the deputy teachers, or the officials to do that. The same experience we have. They would bring along either someone who we think, okay, that's reasonable. But, you know, we wanted the situation whereby we looked at the document, it was a cut and paste. Even the name of our entity was not written correctly, but it was just a cut and paste thing. So we had to revert back to them and say this is not correct. So we do respect the request of Public Management Act. We know that we should be accountable for everything that we do financially. In terms of the members are not active, you know, when we started these entities as associations, it was not easy even to convince the members that we started as an association with a joining for 500 rain, you know, as members. Then when we started formulating business plan, we started to say now we are going to be a business entity, and therefore we should be an association, but operating as something else. It was a big mountain for us to convince the machine. So you find out that there is this communal spirit of wanting to say you are a business entity, but you still have to apply the rules in terms of we are a community, and we have to move away from that. Recently, last year, actually, we proposed in our AGM, because we have our AGM today, that we should amend our constitution to say those have not been active for at least 90 days. We want to do away with those members. But we want to make sure that we are protected, because people are saying, but when you wanted numbers, when the government, when you couldn't reach the 70th person, you couldn't get the assistance of patients in the farm by the government. Therefore, I'm still part of it. I've made it possible for you. You get those kind of items. But what we'd like to say is for the police to protect us when we take such actions. So the constitution is being looked into. The question of the borehole, we initially started with a very good gentleman by the name of Mr. Mac Nohima. He was very helpful and active. But then he had to pass the baton to the younger generation, Anele Yebo. This is where the borehole thing came in, the miscommunication. Well, the man was very young, you know, he could take those into consideration. But this is where things started not really coming together. And then we couldn't just think about the borehole and the irrigation system, you know. We even started calling him Mr. Promises. Because these things were just not what was happening. And then whilst we were in the middle of that, in August, when we held our last PMC meeting, it was at that meeting that he announced to us that he's now leaving the department. At that meeting, not even transferring us or someone or saying, okay, go back to Mr. McRae, who will assign another officer. So it could have been much more better if in July he would have advised us that he's planning to leave the department the following month. And then we could make measures based and start asking him some questions on who would we go to if we went to continue where you left. So that's the scenario of the country.
Thank you.
Two issues that were raised regarding Kosatu. The one was the issue with if Kosatu anti capitalization and so forth or not, and the answer is no. We're not opposed to recapitalization in a federal context. We're just dealing with issues which we think need to be dealt with in terms of recapitalization, rural development, and development of farming sector. So these were issues that we raised. We're not saying we didn't table the things that we say no to the legislation. The issue is that there were two issues raised that COSATU need to make concrete proposals regarding protection of workers, farm workers, and which is true. And we do. At COSATU, we facilitate, we're part of the process of NEDLAC, where there are meant to be discussions on legislation or policy documents or goals which has an impact on socioeconomic issues. And we do participate. And currently, this year, there is a task team in NEDLAC which is going to deal with certain proposals on labor legislation. And that's put forward by the Department of Labor. And even protection of farm workers is also dealing with Department of Labor legislation and things. The difficulty is that we're dealing in the sector that is looking at farm workers here. Now, when there's a legislation that is, or a proposal or a policy that's dealt with in this department, then how do we deal with that linked to the issues of labor issues and protection of employment, conditions of employment? Because we know some of the difficulties is that, and even the Food and Allied Workers Union, the organizers in the sector, they even say that sometimes when a person wants to go onto the farm to employ workers there, the farmer stands there with a gun and says, you don't come on the farm, we're going to shoot you. I mean, there's problems in that sector. It's not easy to organize farm workers, number one. Number two, the big difficulty, and I mean, as part two, we've tabled the issue about labor brokers, and they use labor brokers on the farm sector employment, and it's almost impossible to employ, to organize labor broker employers into, because, for example, there was previously at another place, the union went and organized the Pamela Tents South Africa, took over three companies, retrenched 50% of the workforce, and then employed them through a labor broker. When the union went and they signed to join the union took it, Pamela said to the labor broker, take those workers away, and went to another labor broker, bring the workers up. It's very difficult that we need to find a way of how do we bring this legislation in terms of the sector, how do we link that to what is already existing, and also what is then also needs to be changed in that. And as COSATU, we do participate in the processes of dealing with legislation. And I mean, currently, I mean, there was a NEDLAC labor conference last week, and there issues were raised about what are topics in NEDLAC for this year coming that we're going to deal with. And then in terms of the Department of Labor on labor legislation, we're part of that, and others as well. So we do make proposals in terms of labor legislation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. And members will have a key break. Then after the key break, we'll have the last presentation. Then from there, the department will respond to some of the issues that need their attention. Because we can't say the department must respond now after
also reflect on some of the issues that have been raised by various stakeholders. But let's have a key break, and then after that, so the one presentation, then there will be the comments and reflection on the issues raised by stakeholders, both by department and also by committee. Thank you very much, Mr. Stakeholders.
Thank you.
For the break, just for 20 minutes.
I've read the notion of the underlying cause behind the mental school, you mean exactly that, you know. Anywhere where you need transformation, I suppose, I don't know rugby, I suppose to go to rugby, you would need that little sort of new white coach to mentor in the townships, the black coaches and so on, so that then they can then be at the level of their counterpart. I think the debate and discussion around the notion of mentorship has got to go. Where would the transformed ones, I would argue that there is no transformed black agricultural entrepreneur who's historically experienced and has made it. For the previous dispensation, 20 years back and beyond, didn't allow, literally didn't allow. So therefore, it seems to be an idea that which you are saying, this black, person must be empowered by me, who has all the historical. But the mentor, in my view, chair and through chair, DG, can't define or set the agenda, because that's where the chair would be. Because the experience is let me think of how to say, racist and capitalist and so on. Let me say that. And therefore, the mentor would be playing a technical role within the broader agenda of the one who is being a priest or empowered. I could consider that if there are goals in the concept, but I'm saying it's a concept that applies right across governance, during that bridging, you know. Once you define a business model, I know Prof was in the room when we were having the previous engagement, the last eventuality. Once you define a business model through your department, I do not know how you can then ignore certain fundamental provisions, maybe of your grant funding. Then you then say, oh, these beneficiaries or internet beneficiaries don't want a mentor, and therefore let's bypass it and let them go into their own. And also, what are the risks, you know? I'm sure it's the right continue in the room. I'm just trying to demonstrate it. I don't want to be flown by a white pilot every now and again when I go to the Andrew today, my home, I go right there. I don't want it, honestly, I don't. I would have that black African lady beside me the other day. But when I jump into it, if that black African lady says, I do not want to be mentored by a historical white maid. I'm not going to induce this to racism, because when you're bridging the in South African society, you've got to go to that. And then this African lecturer, PJ Gunia, said, jump onto my plane, I will fly you to Japan. So at some point, I thought those are the underlying definitions, but the concept of mentorship, I'm not defending to the bitter end, but I'm just saying, I think to relate to its basis, to be meaning transfer of skills, another industry that has worked a little, they talk about build, operate, train, and transfer. It seems to be the way in which you bridge the historically excluded. The last question I will make will be on the high per capita cost. It's been coming, and I think I sympathize. I do not know, then again, the department may help us. Does it mean all other funding windows for the emerging business people and agricultural entrepreneurs would then be closed? Because the right debate is with somebody said, would you say, leave the commanding heights of the agricultural economy to the historically privileged? Because if you don't say so, then you must also have certain widows that target to build mega agricultural farmers from historically privileged disadvantage. But is it, I'm also bringing to the question here, to the DG and to Bani, is it saying close all other avenues to emerging small scales and concentrate merely on this? If RICAP is not saying that, RICAP says we want also to tamper with the common life, in the mind, in the work, but in the economy chain.
then probably it's correct. Otherwise, you leave the conglomerates and the monopoly on the open space. It will take you 50 to 100 years. I don't think the estimation is very good. To keep gradually coming with everyone, and then the economics would remain untouched. But at some point, you want to disrupt the economics. Again, my logic, I'm open to challenge there. I prefer to also run along with interpretation. You want to disrupt, or if you want to disrupt at that level, DGI share, DGI, just another second point, DGI have a window for distressed industries. These are big industries. They have been visiting the countries participated in that portfolio in the province. So they have been visiting these industries and seeking to get them up into a public place with millions of rents. Of rent, millions, industry, production, not just a small business. So again, I'm just saying the engagement, say my humble submissions, the engagement need to be kept up better, probably with more time, not at this point, but I'm just saying this is the extent to which maybe we can need to find each other. And the politically connected one interested to really need to expose a whole government really connected the farmer who now a millionaire. Because otherwise we keep using this conception up until it's like years, you know. Let us also show in the studies, my dear prof, this politically connected and show that they are nothing but politically connected. How are they in Ukraine? I'm sorry to find that they're from Northwest, not the case yesterday. Let's prove that she's politically connected and she wouldn't be mad if... Let's prove that an innocent person who makes a submission will never get through. It's only those who are connected to Nguni, to Magdalena, and to whoever who breaks through. Because otherwise, we create impression anywhere on the media. I think there's some print media. Media will then fly with it that if the politically connected, perhaps we need to prove the case of it. And it might be unfair to people like Maya, the wonderful case studies, Mandela Vela, and whatever that was demonstrated. So that's my case on the. There was a case demonstrated by Croft, maybe to the Policing Committee. For me, it's a question of submitting such cases to the Commission and commissioning to show that those cases are there. There were those mamas there who've been going for quite some time without support. Clearly, that is why you are here. Let those cases be forwarded and let's simplify for them and it becomes issues that were not supported at some point. They should be encouraged with us being aware. Before that, I was not aware. I only, as a member of the Commission, I'm out for the first time, I think other members as well. Then we can take up genuine cases of people who seek government support.
Thank you.
Thank you, sir. I'll start off by making a comment directed at the floor. It's quite a comprehensive study, which opens our eyes and minds to where a number of elements in the budgetary process, which we might otherwise not have managed to focus and refocus our thinking, and we appreciate that. And that's why it's so true that South Africa and the data itself have come to all of it. It was just because we are MPs and we have got the department officials, doesn't mean that we are the only people who can think out and try and find solutions to the problems that look at us, especially around the issue of pain. So I appreciate your comment. Now, and obviously this is quite thought-provoking. Now, my question is, okay, I come to the more conventional one. What name would you give to the program that suggests in place of Reagan? So I think Reagan was such an appropriate name given to the program. Obviously, the narrow word away. Now that you have capitalized one cap, it's such a simple. What name, which would carry the kind of meaning that you suggest government should form instead of just a right? You have dealt at large with the concept that government should actually have a budget for restitution rather than taking the budget from this, which is the point that was raised by the earlier presenter of the last one in Francis Woman.
really matter to the person in the street if they get a sentence, a restitution letter, or at the letter where they want the office? Which is more important at the end of the day? That they get a sentence that the government has got more money for people to acquire land, and then people then, once they have acquired that land, then they sit there and say, now we don't have a budget for development. Which in your own mind is more important at the end of the day? Remember that was not in the process of trying to reverse the legacy of 1930. At the same time, they were in the very next realm, want to enable the people to have capital so that they can establish themselves and get the real social benefits out of the land that they can purchase by the government. And that's why I'm opening this debate with you, is whether it's more important to have a strict budget for acquiring land or a budget for people to have, you know, to be able to develop the land that they have acquired. Because somehow again, we see, you know, on our TV screens, people who have got land, they live in the conscience. They say, okay, this is my land, these are the roads, these are the schools. But because there is no budget now coming, let's say from local government, to enable me to do ABC, I demand, I'll then a library, because I demand a budget for government to help me to keep to go to the next level. And the farm business, this is more than the advice. And this is crush your approach to the way the government budget. And I'm not saying I agree the way the government budget, but no, I just want to clear one of the degrees. What do you mean when you say the cap is duplicated in the state? I think this is correct. There's a couple of ways to duplication. You say project is duplicating failed effort of agricultural departments, resulting in extra drain on the state because it should be a major point of concern for general. Now, do we have a history? Because it's a lovely statement. And again, it's rather to say, so I'm trying to get to the thing behind this statement. I'm trying to imply that where government has provided bridging, what I give them up, it actually it's just about every case, because this is a general statement. I was born by my institution in a trick, that is only a general statement. Are you trying to say that in the majority of cases, where government has actually put money, it is in case, in each case, where there is a failed answer by the previous one? Or do you want to talk percentages here? Well, if that is the case, then government would be guilty of a serious crime if they have put money on failed projects previously. Then there will be groups of very dangerous crime. So we would want from you as a capital committee more information on whether when government has put RICAP money, it is actually in cases where they failed. That is for this and that will take you more literally than anything else. So we would not need that information. That will help us to suggest to the government how to restructure the budget. Say, please don't put people's taxes in these projects. So you know, I've got some for the department. I want to put up questions at this point in time. I think I'll have time to make that introduction, you know, by Victor. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Jim. Baba Boltani has a very, very eloquently raised some of the concerns I wanted to raise. I think that may perhaps I take your indulgence and do not wish to repeat what you're saying. But I think the important point I want to make, perhaps to emphasize it, is that Prof, I out of respect, it was not using the engineer in the future because I tend to become a student of plus. Rob, I think it's important that we have an idea from your side exactly to what would be the alternative that you would want to come up with. We wish us to consider you were referring to the University of Pretoria report, essentially is arguing that the Riga can be transformed in a loan facility. Whether you think that would be the best or the solution to the problem, in a way that you feel, I mean, I can deduce from what you were saying that you would actually favor that. Because you were saying that those who are beneficiaries of RICA are actually twice beneficiaries. They've been beneficiaries through the land redistribution program, but they are failed, and now there's the RICA, as you were saying, the recapitalization of the failed project. So then you probably would argue that perhaps the recapitalization might be in the form of the loan. That's the one thing. But I'm also very, very keen, as our comrade Nguni indicated earlier, it is important that those examples, case studies that will come up as we, as a committee, be provided with much more details for purposes of follow-up. Because if there are implementation, administration, blockages, they certainly should deal with it. If through political connections, some people are being seeing undue benefits, then surely those are issues that we need to follow up and correct, most definitely. We won't be able to do it if we do not get the concrete information to follow up. Otherwise, we will be making ourselves how could I say, we will be generalizing. And those, and most of the people who are not politically connected will be become victims of our own subjectiveness in terms of, because we are generalizing that everyone are politically connected. You know, we had an example of a family without the necessary resources who have been struggling and were doing actually well, you know. Surely one would want to achieve to what extent the problem that they are facing, how it can be related so that they can prosper more, you know, that kind of a thing. But I think the points raised by Baba Bhutan is very, very important, that we have that kind of an understanding to exactly what is it that you would want this committee to do. Where should we abandon vehicle? What should a replacement vehicle be? Will it be the one that is proposed by the University of Pretoria, a loan facility? Should that loan facility be located within the land bank, etc.? So this department should have nothing to do with that, should be only department only focus on land redistribution, that kind of a thing. I think it's important that we have this, and thank you very much. It has been very insightful. I must say, I'm very also interested in this, and I don't know how Mr. Pardon would need to follow this up, how I could sell my farm, 34 million, and then rent back my own farm, you know, and then on top of that, get government money, you know, to run this particular farm. Because this is what the example was saying. It was also 34 million seller renting, leasing back from the government, and on top of it, government said, thank you for selling your farm. Here's your lease agreement, plus there's a couple of millions for you to operate your farm. Well, what have you done, or they done, with the 34 million that they received? And where's that million? Is it in Australia? It's important if we get to the to bottom of those kind of things. Thank you very much.
Another one, Charlie?
Well, thank you, Chair President. I'm from families of people who are very like, you can eat your cake and still have it growing. I wish it could happen to all of us. But there are specific cases that I've sufficient in this report. A farm in this area, this community in that area, they did not, you know, get funding. What are the problems? Maybe we need to have a time where we'll ask the department to look at the specific cases that are mentioned in the report. And at least we get what are the challenges and what should this people do to get help. I mean, some of the things, you know, buying a spade, a shovel and a rake, it's like a shame compared to what people are getting. 34 million and you still get something else on top of it. And people just want to get a shovel and a pipe to pipe water to the, you know, to water their gardens. Yeah, that specific case, Chairperson, I think we need to hear from the department, even if it's not today, but we need to come up with a first. But I think it will be unreasonable to expect the DG not to say Project 7 in Okolofute was funded for the applied for. I may not have that information at hand now, but the information is in the office. So let's give them time, you know, to give us those reports in writing and what are the plans for them to deliver this process. And at the same time, even us as a committee, we need to find a way where we cannot travel, all of us, because of financial problems. I think it will even be, it will be like a reason if we can send two people to go visit the project, some of them, if there's a problem with funding. Or send the researchers to go and look at the problem. Our researchers in Parliament, to go and look at the project, and then come back and report. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you very much, honorable members. So that represents, I think, the name of the recap would be the CAP program.
the new name, based on the information that is on the presentation, why is the CAP? Because now we've got the recap.
Over to you, Procurio, commenting some of the issues raised. Thank you for all the responses, suggestions. Thank you also for the challenges. Honourable members, several people said, listen, we get a little snapshot of the story. Clearly there's a huge story behind that. And in fact, Professor Kepa and I have gone back on numerous occasions to several of these projects over a period of a year and a half. And we are writing up and we're very happy to share much more detailed information, including contact details. Some of the project participants or so-called beneficiaries are in regular contact and updating us on negotiations with the department concerning issues and every recap application. So absolutely, I'm committed to support you, support in terms of analysis and sharing research findings and engaging. So we'd be very happy to do that. Also, if the researchers from Parliament wish to visit some of these projects, we're very happy to accompany and support that. I think that there were a few issues raised. The first, Honourable Member, raised this question about mentorship. Everyone has just accepted mentorship, right? And I think that it depends on what you're mentoring people into. And what some people say, we are not wanting to do the same farming that these farmers do. We don't have the capital behind us. We have other priorities. And I suppose land reform was always about challenging not only landholding systems, but to allow people to use land in various ways. There is only one model, right? But I do think that mentorship is crucial. People are wanting to grow crops they've never grown before, access markets that they don't know about, use inputs that require technical knowledge. Of course, there's a need for mentorship. I would suggest drawing a strong distinction between mentorship, which is where somebody is employed to assist you, like a teacher, but also a teacher, versus a strategic partner. Because we came across case after case where the so-called beneficiaries they have a legally registered trust. They don't even have a bank account. They are signing things they don't know. They said, we don't know what it means to be a beneficiary. The department said, we are a beneficiary. We don't know what that means. I'm talking about stories where this is a hollow transformation. Yeah? We're spending lots of money acquiring land, but there isn't real redistribution of land. So in the past land redistribution program, where many people got ownership through CTAs or trusts, and many didn't get adequate support, there's still an asset, yeah? The asset of holding
property is a basis of social power. If you're not the owner, and you're also not controlling the recap money and the decisions about production, investment, paying dividends, then what is this money, public money, being invested in? That I'm raising how much public money is actually going from the public purse in the name of beneficiaries into capture by existing agribusinesses or to individual strategic partners or mentors. I absolutely do not agree that there are strategic partners and mentors that are supportive, creative, committed to a project of transformation and may go well beyond the call of duty and supporting people. On the basis of the field work that we've done, which is very initial, we have come across very worrying stories. And so I thought it's important to alert you as a commission to that. We don't know how representative that is. Yeah? We don't know what the national picture looks like. That's why I think that part of these deliberations must be about engaging with the department. If we need to know, how widely are your resources being distributed? How many restitution and tax redistribution projects are not getting any recap? And those that are, how much is it? Yeah? So that we can see the extent of coverage. We can see the extent to which there is a good distribution of resources, and where it's a very skewed distribution, how is it justified? I don't want to declare what a new program should be like. I think that, you know, the University of Pretoria report, commissioned by DPME, initially said, this is a scrap. Loans is a possibility. The committee clear what the proper function and expertise of each institution is. Memorandum development and land reform, with a core competency regarding land reform, securing rights and redistributing rights in land. We have a Department of Agriculture, a concurrent competency, responsible to provide agricultural support. And we do have a land bank and other institutions responsible to provide finance, including on concessionary basis. What I want to point to from these three different case studies is on the issue of the farm workers. The absence of mechanisms to provide basic support. You don't have to go through a few years of negotiating with a strategic partner. You can get basic support. But then we need to get people's tenure rights right so that the Department of Agriculture can. So it doesn't say, you're here, but you're on a lease, and in a few years' time, the department might kick you off. So we're not going to build a degree. But the next people who get the farm might want to do something else. So the issue of tenure security is a precondition for proper agricultural support. Of course, there are those who are going to scale up, get loans, enter into joint ventures. That's fine, but I think that what we see is that in the past, there was a comprehensive agricultural support program, which was very far from comprehensive in its coverage and in the type of support it provided. Now we see even that house program that, and its provincial departments are saying no, can't support these land reform projects at all, because it's set up and you stopped. Okay. So policy decisions that are being made in rural development and land reform, profound ones, like we are not going to come for a title, are fundamentally shaping people's access to resources. So now that means in the absence of cost, there is no cap. I like the idea of a cap. But there's another meaning of the word cap. You put a cap on something, which means you put a limit. And that's what I also see as missing here, both in the redistribution process. In the past, there were these grants. There were not enough, of course, to buy land. That was a problem. But now, we don't know. Should a department buy a 20 million rand farm? A 40 million rand farm? Should it give to one family or to a community of 200 and subsidizers? There isn't policy guidance on this. And then information is getting back to Parliament. It isn't clear what practice is. So again, there's a question. How is the cap on the extent to which individuals can benefit from public money? That issue of the middle class, I think, is very important. Part of the vision of land reform is poverty alleviation and addressing the crucial situation of farm workers like described. Part of the vision of land reform is enabling black families to commercialize. Yeah? But then we must say, well, and at what cost do we do that? So is 8 million rand per person okay or too much? As in the case of that family of two brothers. This comes in, and they're putting in their own money. That's still something. But is 8 million rand left? And in what circumstances do we justify that? Is 15 million rand per person okay? Now, we don't have policy on this. and you don't have mechanisms to monitor it. And that's why I'm raising a flag to say, I'm not saying it's happening everywhere, we don't know, but there are flags of concern. And so I need systems so that you can perform this oversight function. In response to the Honourable, this issue of the cell and MedPack, in fact, it's even more concerning than the way you reflected it, which is that now that the rental is under the state land use and disposal policy, the rentals are a percentage of net turnover, 5% of projected net turnover. So all the strategic partners have projected their net turnover for the next 5 years, as far as I've seen, and I've seen only very few. But in this case, have projected zero net turnover for the next 5 years. So you can sell, you can not pay rent, and then you get retail. So instead, you know, it's taking back to the debates in the 1980s, within the ANC around what is our vision of redistribution. Do we want subsidized large farms and support smallholder peasant farms? Or do we want to have state farms? Yeah? This is a different moment of time. Now it seems to me we are not subdividing farms. We are having massive state subsidy of large-scale commercial farming, but without critically looking at who is controlling that commercial farming. So are we rerouting subsidies? That is the concern. And again, I have to say, caveat, we don't know what happened elsewhere. And so I'm raising on the basis of a very small number of varying experiences based on a random sample. Your concern, perhaps, if they've already failed, could we be effectively double subsidizing projects that failed and now we put more money in? I think that that's justifiable, to put more money into projects that have failed as long as there's a new plan. And that's what we tackled about originally. If we bought the land, we provided perhaps some support that was clearly not enough or it was inappropriate. We should be putting more money in. The public money has been invested and we've made a good return. But we've been much more cautious about how that happens. In terms of this role of different institutions, there's a long history of the difficulties of bringing landform and agriculture together in separate departments at some point, now even in separate ministries, and I wouldn't presume to declare on that. But I would certainly say that in defining a new program, having a more comprehensive, clear approach in which everybody is eligible for at least a certain minimum level of support, that is it. You shouldn't have to beg and scrape and develop business plans over many years to get a rate and a home. But of course, your requirements, as people are looking for increased level of resources, your requirements have to be equally more challenging. So we don't have the answers, but clearly this is a crucially important area in which it seems there is a degree of resource capture that is very worrying. At the same time, there's massive need that is not being addressed through this program, and many people fall in outside of it. So I think this is a very welcome opportunity to rethink the approach and to bring also agricultural authorities into the conversation. Thank you very much, Professor Abbott. We have listened to all the presenters from yesterday. We've been looking at some of the concerns that they raised. Was noted that the success stories of this program, as I've indicated yesterday, that the issue will not end up here. The country has got the responsibility to take the matter further. But I will then take this opportunity and give it to the DG just for 10 minutes, because we'll not be able to respond to most of the issues that were raised from yesterday up to today. We will reflect on the few issues that have been raised, hoping that we'll consider the submissions made by various stakeholders while we're returning the office and see how best other comments can be integrated into the process of reviewing the policy. DG, over to you.
Thank you, Honorable Chair, Honorable Members. Let us first of all take the opportunity to thank you as a county for offering us this platform and get feedback from the various stakeholders invited here to make a presentation on their experience of the
served by the Department of Attorney to respond blow by blow to each of the 16 direct submissions made here since yesterday. Now, Madam Chair, please allow us to just do a little bit of reflection on some of the of our understanding on the outcome of these deliberations. To respond to a few direct questions that the matter was raised by the Land of Farmers Association at the NERSA and Stellenbosch questions, but the others we have to follow up with the with those who make the presentation here. And but overall, our responsibility is to then go back to the plan we developed when GPME gave us that, enhance it with the submissions that we received here. Because we believe that there were a number of very important issues and significant weaknesses raised about the program that will need our attention. We said yesterday that we accept almost 98% of the findings as were presented, although we accepted others with some conditions. For example, the one that says the second best option is to abandon, recap and complete overhaul everything. We have put some conditions that we can come together with the Department of Agriculture under the leadership of the Chair and the Portfolio Committee on Agriculture and say, what then are we proposing as an approach going forward? We are willing to do that. We are very much clear about the potential implication and the implications that are pointed out in the submission. The second issue that we can't but not be very appreciative of the positive experiences that were shared by some young people on good experiences of retail. Many of them, if not all of them, who came here yesterday, told us about stories that we did not even know. They came from very humble backgrounds, they had nothing, but they are making incredible success. So we were humbled by those submissions. And it is our duty to find a way, Madam Chair, of capturing those as case studies so that we can replicate them across the country. The two very, very exciting models on the poultry industry. The value chain model has been developed by the two farmers that came here, who between them are producing nearly 4 million eggs a year. We've got hundreds of such projects across the country. Perhaps some of them are those that are not benefiting from retail. With that experience, we can make it succeed as well just as we have. So it's important to cover that out. We did observe that some of the presenters made reference to some of those as a lead question. I guess it's the paradox of success. We've seen people coming from nothing, becoming so powerful, they have a vision. One young man said, we want to make a billion within a specific period of time. They are not ashamed of doing that, and I think that's exactly what we want to do, to rekindle the clash of black commercial farmers that were destroyed by the 1939 Act. It is not about decency, but the state has an obligation to all citizens, be they subsistence farmers or be they future commercial farmers. Especially in the chair, because today the average age of a commercial farmer in South Africa is 64 years old.
If we do not build a new cater of the formation armor in South Africa today, who is going to guarantee food security for the country in the next 10, 15 years? So we have got to correct the weaknesses in the policy so that we succeed in doing this. Madam Chair, there were two big issues for us that came out of this presentation, which we must attend to with your guidance. The first are the glaring and very serious operational weaknesses in the system, in our departments, in the implementation of the retail program, in the interpretation of the policy, lack of communication, poor turnaround times that are very costly, and so on. So we're saying under that big subject of operational leadership, there are many things in general that we must address as we go away back to the officers. We have even heard that our own misinterpretation or misconception of retail has also affected some of the presenters here. For instance, the retail is premised on a strategic partnership model. But I've heard strategic partnership and mentorship being used as if they are two different things. Mentorship is a subset of the broader strategic partnership framework. It is one of the three or four approaches to the strategic partnership. It is not either mentorship or strategic partnership. We have seen the same thing with our organization. On the policy issues, we have shared, they are big, and others, you said, continue with the foreign land ownership, communal land tenure. You would, as you would know, we would be bringing various pieces of legislation to respond to some of the, it would allow yourselves and your committee to do your own public consultation so that you engage on those policy and legislation. The same thing on the transition from Kosatu with regard to the working and living conditions of people on farms. We are bringing the ESHA Amendment Act that we have processed through the system, the government system, and at some point we hope to approach Parliament for the amendment of the system so that we can engage with the stakeholders on the issues that are raised. But there is also a parallel process led by the Deputy President looking at the whole question of living and working conditions and of people living on farms across the country, focusing in the Western Cape. As a matter of fact, we'll be hit at the Dorrance on Monday, looking at developing a much more bigger social compact like has been done by government, labor, and the mining house in the mining sector. We're looking at developing a similar social compact. So there will be basis to deal with those. We thank Professor Hall with the different version of her analysis. They have taken the GTME or the University of Pretoria analysis a much lower. And I think she's posed very, very good questions. We will definitely engage. We hope outside of this litigation. On the other side, Madam Chair, she has done in the same case. We've met with her, as she indicated, and we have offered to work with Flash to find a way of responding to the very serious challenges she's raising. And I think that was sometime last year. I don't think we might make progress in the area of so outside of this litigation. I think there are a few policy issues, Madam Chair. The strategic partner, especially the one that she's referring to about the big agribusinesses. We had the sugar industry here, we had the grain industry. I think there may be some valid issues that she's raising. But I think at its disposal, the state has got very strong levers, as Mr. Honorable has raised. How do we use the levers at the disposal of the state to change the structure of ownership of the sugar industry in South Africa? How do we use the policy levers at the disposal of the state to change the structure and ownership of the agriculture, of the grain industry? How do we do that in the Western Cape to change the structure of the fruit and vegetable industry, which has accounted for massive export revenue into the African continent, but has got 1% black ownership. So these are the big policy questions we have got to grapple with, and we are indeed grappling with them. But what are the trade-offs if we're going to have to use this company? Because we have got to work with organized business. We have got to work with organized agriculture. As we provide incentives, Honorable Ngui, as we're planning the auto sector, it is not millions, it's billions. The state has put in the auto sector. That's why we've got a vibrant auto sector industry, exporting very massive generation of export foreign exchange for the country. How do we use similar levels in agriculture to put the state? These are the kind of questions we're posing to us, and we are losing it. There is a myth that we have abandoned supporting people in the communities. We can show that there are a number of farmers over the last 2, 3 years, even 4 years, that have been farming in the communities. They have graduated out of communities. They are beneficiaries of the past projects. They are saying, we want to move a step higher out of the communities. We have given those people farms, free care, welfare care, northern care, and so on. So it is not being abandoned. We are assisting people in the environment. But also there is the myth that RICAP has become the panacea for agricultural development in South Africa. And I think this is influenced by the continued view of the mandate of the Department of Rural Development and Land Reform through the vision of the old Department of Land Affairs, which was about land only. We have got various other programs in the department other than RICAP. We have got the River Bay Catalytic Program. We are involved in the revitalization of various irrigation schemes that are in former homeland. They are benefiting hundreds of people. We are putting millions of rands in that area. But we have got what we call animal and feral management program, where we are targeting farmers, black smallholder farmers, in the former homeland. We are saying, we want to give you opportunity to have bigger farms, better farms outside of the former homeland, so that we decongest the crowded homeland to give farmers that have stuck in that environment a better chance to succeed. Ultimately, land reform must lead as an impact to job creation. Otherwise, how else are we going to just make? We can't just be talking about redistribution for its own sake. It has got to lead to the transformation of ownership of industry, but ultimately create jobs, which is a key issue, particularly for people living in rural areas.
Thank you.
Thank you. So, RICAP not benefiting the solution. We can engage. I think it's actually not true. We can engage and provide that. Actually, the reason why we said restitution has got to focus on the settlement of claims. What we have done is to shift the implementation of what was called post-settlement support from the commission to the department. Because the mandate of the commission is to settle claims. Our own analysis showed us that the commission was spending 80% of its time grappling with issues of post-settlement support, resolving disputes among GPAs, instead of researching affecting claims. That is what has happened. But the truth is that, as you are aware, Honorable members, you approve our budget. We do not have a budget line item called post-settlement support. We only have money for settlement of claims. But how else then do you support? If you look on average, redistribution may have delivered more hectares than restitution. But if you look on average, settlement versus a cash farm, restitution gives people far more number of hectares of agricultural land than redistribution. Now, how do you take a going concern that is employing hundreds of people and then not providing support? So to say that we must not put any conditions to restitution for development purposes, I think we need to be reviewing that. Madam Chair, I refer to the legislation that we're going to bring it here. Except to say that there was one very critical point that was raised by the Shura in by Great Essay yesterday. We have got to have a disbursement calendar. The biggest wastage of resources in retail is when we fail to give farmers on time, the money on time. That's where wastage happens. And we have got to credit. And we will sit with the industry to help us develop that disbursement calendar so that resources are received on time by the farmers, not bring feed during drought when cattle are already dead. So that is one thing that we have to take out. But when I don't check, we're ahead. We are seriously as concerned as you are. We will act as we have begun to do so. We will develop a plan that will bring to yourselves, and we would like to use the plan to hold us accountable.
Thank you for the mention. Actually, there are 16 that have been made by the department that have indicated before that there were lots of issues that have been raised from yesterday. So you can't reflect on all the issues now, but you will just, you have noted some of the issues. I want to give them time to consider those issues while reviewing the policy. Some of the issues will be taken into consideration. It doesn't mean that all the issues that have been raised here will be included in the review of the policy, but they will just look at each and every recommendation that was made, whether it can assist in improving the implementation of the CAP program. Can I then take this opportunity to invite Honorable Mungumi to make the reflection on the issues that have been made from yesterday to today and also the way forward, because that will not be the end of this story when we come out of this traumatic issue that we're going to do as the committee moving forward. Thank you very much. Over to you, Honorable Mungumi.
If you allow me, Chair, I'm just there to hear the royal voice from the issue. When you give respect to them, they arise thank you very much, Chair. Chair, quickly, definitely the committee is going to meet and to look at the reports of this today public hearing. But for now, just to set us going, to set us thinking, one could, on behalf of the committee, the collective, welcome and appreciate the submissions and presentation made before the committee is passed today. The purpose for now is just to give the final report on the emerging insights regarding implementation of the RAGP before the capitalization development program. We base this from the presentation on the evaluation commissioned by the department, DPME rather, and our own DRG MR, and also the presentations by the CPA, cooperatives, academia, society organizations, and everyone of our participants. Chair, may just for a moment also wish to once again keep engaging on the framework and on the context in which we're doing the reflection. The same skills for whatever recapitalization is in agriculture or anywhere else, and the rolling out government program continues to remain uneven with pitfalls and serious barriers for health. And like the story goes, it still remains very relevant to reflect just in part on the late gender and last manifestation of these, you know. Starting from the national question or the race question, the land question in Hida to South African society depended on a clearly articulated colonial history in this country, fraught with wars and laws. I now go from someone. Wars and laws shaped the Hida to history in our country. Unjust laws, practically, and unjust wars. The 1913 Land Act has been mentioned a time and again over the past 2 days. It has its own legacy
touching the aspect of the rent question. Because as I'm just about the laws, the group area effect, etc. But linking the rent question to the broader national question in the South African society. Therefore, the ruling party's program in strategy and tactics called the National Democratic Revolution seeks to articulate a broad roadmap within which to understand and hence to move South Africa forward. Measures and programs to resolve the land question, therefore, have got to be firmly located in this context for consistency and coherence. Otherwise, we can see about that in some departments and each one can anchor itself on what is the program of the ruling party by democracy, not by its own demands, just like democratic parties. And therefore, for coherence, all measures and all programs have got to connect with the theoretical premise and basis. With respect to the class question, Madam Chair, it manifests itself in various modes and folds. Quite a number of the political parties, activists, analysts, academia, and all would love to distance and dissociate themselves from imperialism. But how does imperialism manifest itself in our own sector? Because imperialism is a form of a class question, you know. It was clear from some of the success stories yesterday that these manifestations, for instance, the at the level of the input, whatever agricultural support, the DG, at the level of the input, at the level of the plant, who owns the plant? Which concession project was able to own the plant, the dozers, the tractors, the what, the excavators and all those? Who owns the plant? Is the multinational, the big project, it does not even worry. So, there is that level of manifestation, but also at the level of one successful entrepreneurship yesterday led by Mr. Maya, a youth by my definition, I hope you won't take exception. One collection, the court says, we produce and roll out 56 million out of whatever the government has given us. 56 million a year we plug back into the economy through our own expenditure and whatever we're doing. That's our contribution per annum. But you are saying, unfortunately, we do not determine the price, so who determines the price? So the class question, the determination of the price doesn't come even from the producer, the emerging producers which the department and our food sales are trying so hard to reach to. So the class question is manifest at least at that level, which you might seek to sum up as the value chain dominance by the monopolies. And therefore, whatever the department, its partners, the DAF, and all would seek to do, there will still be that constraint, you know. But it should be appreciated that there's such an effort. The question of gender, Honorable Chair, is also utterly and clearly manifest. You know, if you just take all the productive sectors in our own agricultural and land regime and look and just divide them into the gender, my rough estimate, not a very limit, would be that less than 20% would be applicable to gender. When the committee reached out to another day, Dr. Kimberly Carpenter, we asked this question from the department at that level, not gender. And they were saying, well, it's difficult to rope women into family. Issue family is a main thing. And the committee was very much worried by that. So they official departmental response, Honorable Chair, you remember. And therefore, The gender question, I was making earlier on an analogy about life and so on. So I was imagining in this new South Africa, this African woman coming from rural areas who then the pilot, you know. So that's a right to find. So it's been due to our own issue. So in our own sector, and as we see here, the gender question is uncomfortably looking at us. All these big fingers, opinion makers, academia, and everyone, how are they contributing to changing the gender balance in the post-level metaphors, as you may wish to call it, in this particular program? So the gender question remains a very, very begging question. In that manner, Chair, I will sum up in my own view a reference to the departure point, as we seek to do what we seek to do.
therefore say that there is and that continue to be the underlying features of the society and whatever the government program seek to do. What about it can best be done to influence the thoughts for the time being in the ruling party? I think the forthcoming conference of June, the policy conference in June, would learn a lot from some of the studies, from some of the insights, for a lot of the people to recommend in the positive direction taking South Africa forward. And that is where it's very difficult to temper with the status quo in a much, much fundamental sense. Remember, the ruling party talks about the radical stage of the economic transformation. And quickly, said the two, three last things to look at. The design of the program coming closer home. The design of the program, we acknowledge that it does appear that we need to go back to the questions about what RICEP is all about. Is it a funding program? Is it a comprehensive support mechanism? And who are targeted beneficiaries and who is being excluded? Are the targeted beneficiaries which is the politically connected? Let's start the show and prove this politically connected. So one thing yesterday I liked, who said every day we kept on going to knock at the door. Every day we kept on, up until did you hear that the doors of your director are closed. For as long as those doors are open, I think let's make a clarion call to community, to society out there. They must go and knock at those doors. And let's find out people who cannot break through because they are not politically connected. There's danger in terms of the revolution elsewhere in Africa. Then it becomes only certain elites who benefit. But let any other innovative South African go and knock at the doors and let's see if the cases will not be held. I would commit you, my dear committee, to say the case that Prof. Paul was highlighted, a case which we firmly recommend to the department to look into, so there will also be academic connections.
Yes, so those cases that are not politically connected, but because they were connected to the good professor, there will be academic connected. But a case which I think we firmly recommend that they be held. And any other stakeholder who has got cases, has not been held from the big office in home. Let's actually about those that the door is open. Let those cases be brought forward so that they are actually assisted, you know. So like I said, we need to revisit the recap and look at the witnesses. The good stories have been highlighted. One is very fascinating at the present. To hear that. I admire the YouTube research. You know, this teenage player boy, no, that's meant to him. Now, are you really a millionaire? Is it too much for them inside? Like, how should we drink children? How should I, you know? And then that concern, the key story, we are so excited that they could have done better for us. Well, I ask him, would you be prepared, your mother of this, Maya, would you be prepared to go to other provinces to support such innovation in Latin America? Otherwise, there will not be competition in Kenya. We're more than willing. The government, the department can invite us to go in there and help anywhere else. So when it does look like or a church next to me, the good stories are advanced and welcome the good stories. I was saying yesterday, I don't know much about the Bible, but I don't apologize. But those who are able to evaluate to this program, thank you very much. The Bible confirms that it's good to say some, and we'll continue to say the rest. The management, we think that something has got to be done to help them. Thanks to pitch up. The funding comes in July. Yes, the flowering season was in the previous November, January, December. And therefore, management tightening up, and there was cases of cases coming to the text, the earlier presentation by the center, but that regardless of offense, I know they will take offense, so I cannot just remember that. Now, the regardless of offense was saying the cases fall to the text whenever the institutional memory. I think that is, we want to address the issues so that these issues are taken care of through proper management and tightening of the management.
I would just mention, Chair, that the integration with the value chain is one area, the empowerment of farmers and the benefits of the program is another. The alignment in the context of all other policies of this, the RAP program to be aligned nicely, all those are areas on which our planning could really deal. But the committee is going to check and receive the report and the final report and ultimately act on this. I sit down with that one second. I sit down that second by indicating the indication for oversight that we need to, we will definitely go and coordinate with that sort of agriculture policy. Second impression that role in government is it must be responsibility for some of the other programs so that the agricultural support is there accommodate. And also we have to go with to meet with the DTME and the Agri-Future National Treasury and so on, so that we anchor and the affiliation is that transversal, you know. Having said those, Chair, thanks so much for your last 3 seconds. Having the message, we think that with a preliminary reflection, we will then present the committee and adopt the report and circulate it to the various stakeholders. We thank you so much for your participation. We take every view in raising the 2 days very, very seriously. We will try to integrate it into our work. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Honourable Member Mbuni. Both Parliament and government is accountable to you. I think the 2 days were very important days for you, because what we do here as a committee was part of our work, was part of oversighting, to hear how do you feel about this recap. Is it working for you? Is it not working for you? If it's not working for you, what is it that we need to improve on it? But what I wanted to emphasize is that the few resources that we have, let us use them effectively, efficiently, and economically. When it is resources, it depends on corn, meaning that let's go back in peel. Let's use what we have. We'll get the support. But let's go back and work in order to fight poverty, unemployment, and hunger. I want also to thank you for being part of the public hearing, have safe journey home, hoping that you won't regret being part of this process. You have assisted us, you have assisted the department. Moving forward, we'll deal with all the comments, the concerns that you've raised. You have appreciated the positive impact of the recap. You have criticized what you criticized, and also you gave us some proposals on how best can we improve. Government alone cannot do the best, but working together with you, we can better the lives of the South African people by providing them with food, providing them with work in order to improve their life. Thank you very much. 15 minutes, the mission is